Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Alex von Goldstein, Rabbit, Bay Area Guy, and Ryan England. We're going to be discussing the election results.
What are they, Robert? What are the election results? I've had a really bad hangover the last couple of days, and I've been in a daze. I have no idea what happened. Who won, Robert? Who won?
I think, who's that guy named Evan McCullen?
Evan McCullen won? No, really, you're kidding. It wasn't Evan McCullen. Who won? Who won?
Evan McCullen, yeah.
Oh my god. So what is this? Did he win the popular vote, too? Evan McCullen won the popular vote?
He won the egghead cuck vote. It turned out to be like the majority demographic.
Oh, wow. Oh my god, wait. The majority of Americans are egghead cucks? I didn't know that.
Well, according to the National Review.
Wait, that's the cover of National Review, like this month, right? Is egghead cuck nationalism. With Evan McCullen on the cover.
It's interesting is his kind of ideology. It's like he's ultra conservative, like fiscally and socially, but then he's for like open borders, free trade, and war.
In other words, a libertarian.
Except for the war and and social issues.
To an extent, I suppose.
Well, anyhow, on to a more serious topic. Donald Trump won the election, and I think even a lot of us here are kind of shocked because, I mean, I didn't fully trust the polls because the media, had a lot of propaganda out there, and a lot of the polls were rigged. But at the same time, there was this long period where I was very pessimistic. And then you had the whole, like, a pussy grab scandal, and Trump was down in the polls. Then you had the thing where the FBI reopened their investigation, and then Trump was recovering. But before the election, the polls showed Hillary as winning. And then election night, it was kind of like the Brexit, like this last-minute surprise, and then Trump came in and win.
But, like, the polls... You know those polls were cooked. I mean, the LA Times poll was like the only accurate one. I knew they were cooked. I could just feel it.
But wouldn't they, if they show Donald Trump is winning, wouldn't that motivate Democrats to get out there and vote?
Well, exactly. And here's the thing about polls, and some people on the left who criticize the Democrats pointed this out. They said that polls don't necessarily reflect human factors such as the motivations to turn out and vote. And all of these polls were based on models that presumed a certain voter turnout, but obviously that was not the case.
Yeah, and obviously Trump and voters were very enthusiastic. There's, like, with Hillary supporters, there's, like, the hardcore Hillary supporters who vote for her just because she has a vagina, but for the most part, like,
they're a minority. Well, not only they vote for her because she's not Donald Trump.
Yeah, or they vote for her because she's not Donald Trump. But the Bernie Sanders supporters, they don't like her. A significant portion either stayed home, voted for Jill Stein, and I wouldn't surprise me if a significant number voted for Donald Trump even, because Trump won all these blue states like Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Indeed. And I believe he's the first Republican since 1984 to win Wisconsin and the first since 88 to win Pennsylvania. So that did actually shock me quite a bit. But I shouldn't be too surprised given that Hillary was basically the NAFTA candidate.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bay Area guys. Those protectionist issues, and he really appealed to, like, working class whites. And that's the main reason Romney lost, is because he alienated those voters in those states. I mean, Romney lost Ohio. Trump didn't just win Ohio, he actually won it by a healthy margin. And the other thing that's important to point out is people are saying that Trump's rhetoric on immigration was going to cost him minority votes. But his share of, like, black and Hispanic votes was actually, like, 2 points higher than Mitt Romney.
Right.
And on top of that, he did significantly better with working class whites. I think he even got, like, 1/3 of Hispanic men voted for Donald Trump. So that all these just kind of – it sort of exposes a lot of the myths of the media propaganda.
It's also the fact that, you know, most people don't realize that, like, there's a good portion of Hispanics that, you know, that identify as white and, like, with Europeans. They're not, you know, the media tries to, like, lump all of these people together as though they're monolithic. And, you know, Trump is also – he was also a lot cooler than Romney. You know, he was a celebrity. You know, he's been in, like, rap videos before. Like, there was a certain segment of the black population that was going to, like – just vote for him because he's like a baller, you know? Like, not a huge percentage, but you know, definitely he had more appeal than Romney, who was also tarred with, like, just as much of the
racist,
you know, the same tags. Slurs that he was, like, he was a racist and all this stuff. Like, they say that about everyone.
Every Republican.
Exactly. And you know what? Yeah. That actually reminds me of something that the parody blogger conservative pundit / Hillary PR team once said. And he sort of tweeted that, you know, we should go back to the old days of conservatism when Democrats didn't call us racist.
And when was that? Exactly. Yeah, that's a joke. Yeah. But
what I've been finding is I've been hearing from people privately, like over private communication on Facebook, from people across the old political spectrum. I've been hearing from guys that I knew who were evangelical Christians all the way over to guys that I knew that were Marxists. And they were saying, you know what? I'm kind of glad he won.
And do they all have different reasons, I would assume, right?
To some degree, yes, but to some degree, kind of similar reasons too. Frustration with social justice warriors, for example.
Is that a big part of it, you think?
I think that's a factor. I think what was decisive in all of this is really just how entrenched in the halls of power Hillary Clinton really is. She can't pull off that populist vibe. Not when you were shilling for NAFTA and welfare reform and all those neoliberal pro-corporate things that Bill Clinton did. Not when you voted for Iraq, not when you voted for the Patriot Act, not when you voted for the 2006 border fence. Yeah. And then she goes and tries and attacks Trump for wanting the wall when she voted to start the damn thing in the first place, back when Bush was still in office.
Alienation of Muslims, because people can talk all they want about Trump's demonization of Muslims, but who's actually killed them by the hundreds of thousands? Who's advocated for policies that have actually ruined the lives of millions of brown people? Hillary.
But the thing is, it's okay to... you can, like, slaughter them in their own countries, but as soon as they arrive here, we have to be, like, ultra-sensitive.
Invade the world and fight the world.
Yep.
Well, yeah, there's that. It's like you can, you know, Trump was basically like, yeah, you know, we don't want to attack these countries and bomb them. You know, we're just going to, like, you know, not invite them in here, not import them, and just let them do their own thing. Whereas she actually wants to, you know, get involved in all these Middle East civil wars and bomb them, but then also, like, invite them here, like, after they're pissed off about it, they invite them here by the millions where they make problems here.
I saw this thing you posted, Alex. Trump's election was a repudiation of the Bush legacy and the kind of Bush-style republicanism. And he defeated both the Bush and Clinton dynasties, which is remarkable. But this is where I saw this thing where this is from Reason Magazine. So I'm taking this with a grain of salt because
they have their own agenda. That Bolton would be his Secretary of State.
He's like the ultimate like neocon.
Yeah, but that's from Reason.com. You know, I think that. You know, I mean, obviously, if that's true, it's really bad because, like I was saying to my friend on the internet earlier, I saw Trump as being a anti-war candidate, as being someone who represented a kind of mirror to the Eurasianist dogma, you know, the kind of Dugin thing that Putin, I guess, tries to do, which is non-intervention, which is allowing countries to have self-determination. So I really think that John Bolton, I really hope that Trump is sincere and he doesn't have John Bolton be his Secretary of State. It'd be better.
And Trump, it kind of goes back to the whole art of the deal where you put names out there and then you back down. Like, I think he could just be putting names out there to kind of give a sort of like fig leaf to the establishment. But if he did pick John Bolton, I would be extremely disappointed. But the reality is, I mean, Trump, all these people in the alt-right, they have this idea that Trump is like this god emperor, and he's going to like transform America into this like utopia.
They're the opposite stupid extreme of the SJWs, who think he's basically the Antichrist. Like, they are both kind of mirror images of each other in this extreme projection that they do.
So the reality is Trump will be dramatically better than a Clinton or an Obama or a Bush, but we also have to accept that he's going to do a lot of things that will disappoint us.
Well, and here's the thing. I remember back in 08 when Obama was elected, liberals were just consumed by this euphoria. They felt so much hope. They thought Obama would engender so much wonderful change. And yet it turned out he was just another boring neoliberal technocrat, and a lot of people felt let down. Yeah. So I'm afraid that a lot of Trump's fans in the alt-right are setting themselves up for similar disappointment when he doesn't actually deliver for them, just like Obama didn't deliver for liberals or blacks.
Yeah, I don't think that people on the alt-right see Trump as like a god emperor. That's like just a meme. You know, the real support for Trump is just that he's going to is that what's going to happen is that the backlash that he causes, which you can see now in these protests and the right and just the freakouts, that is going to push us into something that's going to lead to a more authoritarian environment that's going to push him towards it's kind of like like a pressure cooker type thing. So it's not as though they think he's going to get in there and implement all these policies. It's the reaction that he causes is going to drive the right to become what they want it to be, out of a reaction to the reaction to Trump. It's not that they think that he's like this white nationalist or anything like that. I think it's just that it's really just a devastating blow that they're trying. They wanted to destroy the Republican Party so that you know, the left was going to help them take it over. They're going to push them into it. Richard Spencer talked about that before, how they were going to take over the Republican Party, and that the left wants the alt-right to be in charge of the Republican Party, so they're going to help them do it by, like,
yeah,
by mainstreaming these views.
Trump as an individual, but it's basically like a referendum on, like, globalism and political correctness. I think it's vastly pushing the Overton window. Like, I hear liberals now saying that, like, Trump's made it socially acceptable to be, like, a racist and a misogynist.
Well, I also want to say that all these liberals who go on and say that Trump is Hitler, it's obvious that Donald Trump, you know, is not a white nationalist or anything, even, you know, he's not a white nationalist at all, really. He's, if anything, he's an American nationalist, if anything, really. And the thing is, though, them saying that he's Hitler constantly has effectively made him Hitler in the minds of liberals. So the liberals think that the alt-right is now in charge of the Republican Party in America. And Joseph Bernstein at BuzzFeed, he's going on, oh, well, the alt-right, you don't even have to call it the alt-right anymore. You can just call it the right. You know, and all these types are just saying the, and then Richard Spencer yesterday, he's like, we're the normies now. So it might just be that now. I don't know.
Well, here's
yeah,
the thing.
They're trying to use meme magic. Well, you know, the people in the alt-right are trying to use, you know, quote, meme magic to basically meme themselves in charge. So it's kind of like how Spencer always said that they were punching above their weight. You know, because it's a small group of people, but they were being able to get all of this media attention, and they're just using it to, you know, to push themselves to the forefront that way. And this is just continue of that process.
I wanted to talk about a point Robert made regarding this being a referendum on globalization, because when I look at Trump's victory, I don't just look at any single factor, be it Hillary's emails or SJWs. This is part of a global reaction against neoliberal multiculturalism,
yeah, yes,
because
exactly.
you see it with Narendra Modi in India. You see it with Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines. You see it with the rise of nationalists in Europe. You see it with growing authoritarianism in Turkey. Populations all over the world, in both the Western and non-Western world, are basically saying that, you know, this bizarre combination of globalization, social justice, and cutthroat neoliberal economics sucks, and we don't want anything to do with it anymore.
Yeah, we're living through a very profound political realignment. You're seeing this with a lot of these anti-immigrant then parties, the so-called European New Right, and part of their surging in the polls. And I read an article the other day that part of their success is that they are positioning themselves on the left in a lot of ways that even the socialists aren't. They're tending to be the most in favor of welfare, in favor of workers' rights, and they're positioning themselves too as the defenders of gay rights and women's rights in the face of a rising tide of Islamic fundamentalism among the migrant populations. And they are really surging in the polls because of this.
I think Trump's done the same thing, but on a smaller scale. I mean, obviously, he does have to kind of appeal to generic conservatives, but he has said, like, he'll protect gays against radical Islam. And on economics, he's said that he'd preserve some level of a social safety net, like Social Security and Medicare. And one other trend that's interesting, which ties in with the kind of alt-left theme, is a lot of states voted for Trump, but also passed, like, progressive referendums. I know a rabbit state, Arizona, they voted for Trump, but also to raise the minimum wage. Here in California,
right,
like, I voted for Trump, but I also supported a lot of progressive ballot initiatives. Like, I voted to legalize marijuana. I voted for the ballot initiative to ban – that would basically go against the Citizens United decision to ban like corporate donations. I voted for the ballot measure to ban plastic bags. I voted for the bill in California that would put a cap on prescription drug costs.
Prop 61.
Yeah, I mean, Barry Guy, did you kind of vote the same way?
Exactly. Well, I didn't really vote for president, to be honest, because given that I live in California, it's not like my vote's going to count for president anyway, but I did vote on the propositions, sort of almost identical to the way you voted.
And also, I guess some people just vote like straight down the line what their party says.
Well, a lot of times they do, but what Trump has shown is that all of this conventional wisdom no longer applies. He repudiated the Bush legacy. He attacked free trade. He even made comments that made some suspect he wasn't fully loyal towards Israel, and he was not penalized for it among Republicans, despite the delusions of the party elders.
Well, I think Donald Trump won because he presented a strong nationalist image. He talked about factories, you know, factory job loss. And when he talked about that and talked about factories moving to, you know, Nabisco moving to Mexico. I mean, I think we all know that from Trump just saying it a million times. And that image of the factory moving to Mexico and all these American people losing their jobs and having them replaced by Mexican workers in Mexico, that made a lot of people upset. I think it's sort of a sad image. It's sort of like we feel like we're losing something when we see that happening. And yeah, I think for normal people, he just represented that kind of economic nationalism, even, and in a way that none of the other candidates came close to. Maybe Bernie Sanders, but you know, he was gone after a while.
Oh yeah, and I did see that press release by Bernie Sanders where he said even though he thinks that Trump is like a racist and a xenophobe and all that stuff, he said he's still willing to work with him on specific measures if it's to help the working class.
Yes, and I think what's interesting is regarding this sense of loss. I remember reading an article by, yes, the odious David Frum in The Atlantic, where he said that Trump's voters were not motivated by any specific ideological conservatism. They just had a sense that this country used to be better for people like them, and they want that country back. And that's why Trump's whole slogan, Make America Great Again, resonated so much.
And that has a kind of across the old political spectrum appeal, too. Like, the conservatives kind of liked the wrap yourself in the flag kind of thing. Keep it to us and to our culture, but there's a certain segment of the progressives that bought in with the economic side of that. And, you know, you could really read between the lines with what Bernie Sanders was telling Trump there. He might as well have come out and said that when it comes to free trade, I'm with you. And by the way, I just got some excellent news. It really does not look like the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to fly.
Yeah,
it will not be ratified by Congress.
That is really fucking great. That is amazing.
That's profoundly good news. I was just grinning ear to ear when I saw that. I was almost in tears. It's the best news we've had in a long time.
Yeah, that.
And he can prevent, I mean, even if he doesn't, like, turn our country around, at the very least he can prevent all these awful things from happening.
I mean,
like
that is amazing. Like, if Donald Trump in a way just sort of stands there and just says no, I mean, I want him to do a lot of things, trust me, but if the main thing is just turning these insane ideas away, that would be great. Like, the TPP not passing is great news for America, and it's great news for the rest of the world. It's a huge blow to the globalist empire. It's a huge blow to them.
And even though, like, I don't like his whole sort of a supply-side economics about cutting taxes for the rich.
Yeah.
It's really crucial.
I'm not fond of that either.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's crucial to point out that the biggest redistribution of wealth from the middle class and working class to the 1% is mass immigration. and outsourcing of jobs.
Well, immigration control is one of the single most significant market interventions there is. I've just read a book by some prominent economists to say that that factor, immigration control, more than any other, impacts wage levels.
Oh, was it Ha Jun Cheng by any chance?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I read it too.
Rabbit, do you want to talk about the article you wrote on the election and, like, you talk about the reasons that you're voting for Trump and some of your thoughts on the other candidates?
Yeah, I mean, I supported Trump just for really a few simple reasons, like, you know, his what it really boils down to is that he was against free trade and, you know, against NAFTA and all of these things, and he was really very, very left-wing on a lot of, you know, economic and domestic issues. Other than, like, you know, tax cuts and some of that stuff, I think he was just like
Andrew.
He's just trying to appeal to, like, basic bitch, like, yeah, conservatives, because he thinks, like, that's what they want to hear. But if you look at his overall, like, remember, like, the conservatives hated him because he supported universal health care. You remember he said that, oh, it works. Looks like it works fine in Canada. You know,
well,
like,
he wrote this book back in 2000 where he actually did propose, like, a massive tax increase on the top, like, on billionaires. And I think he came out in favor of universal health care. That was when he was talking about running as an independent candidate for the Reform Party.
Right. And then, you know, also, I mean, more than anything, he was also against the Middle East intervention, against war with Russia. And most importantly, though, is that he really was, you know, I'm white, and he's the only candidate who wasn't openly hostile toward white people. You know, like, that's really what it boils down to. And you can see that whites actually voted as like another minority group in this election. He even won a— you hear all this talk about how the divide between the old people and young people, like, Trump actually won white millennials. You know, the reason why he did so poorly with millennials is because there's so many more non-whites in the nation now. But he actually won white millennials. He won white women, even though Hillary was running.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing. I think, you know, on some issues, some of us probably lean more towards, you know, someone like Jill Stein. But if you just look at, you know, it's like Sanders, too. If you just look at what she says and what she does, you know, she's a Jewish, like, social justice warrior. You know, she took a VP candidate who's, like, a black nationalist. You know, she supports intersectional feminism, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, every single, you know, anti-white, like, social justice cause. So it's like, at that point, it's like, you know, even in the sense that, you know, her and Sanders were economic nationalists, like, you know, they cave in right away as soon as they get accused of being, like, nativist or racist. Remember, like, when Sanders was against
open borders,
but then
he said it was a right-wing conspiracy.
Then Jorge Ramos, when he has the guy from Vox in front of him, Ezra Klein. Then he, you know, oh, open borders, that's a right-wing conspiracy. But then when Jorge Ramos is like, oh, you're against open borders, then he sort of backs away from it, depending on who he's talking to, you know.
Oh, right. Speaking of Ezra Klein, didn't you think it was brilliant the way he called Hillary Clinton one of the most extraordinarily gifted politicians ever?
I love how— – did you guys see Louis C.K. on Conan?
No.
He was like, Louis C.K. No. was like, you know what? Some people are saying they're voting for Hillary because she's not Trump. Well, you know what? I think she's great. And I'm just like, he's like, she is great. And there's this whole thing about, like, there was this weird, like, libtard reaction to Hillary in the last 2 weeks where it was like, you know, last year they all hated her because she was the neoliberal establishment and they all liked Bernie. And then Bernie got, you know, obviously, the Democratic Party is so corrupt, you know, he did get the nomination taken from him by Hillary, you know, and And then, like, once Hillary had it, they were like, okay, well, we got to vote for her. She's still terrible, but she's not Trump. And then, like, in the last 2 weeks, it was like, no, she is a brave, amazing woman. Like, we love her. Oh, my God. And that just shows, like, there's, like, a feminine mindset. Because that is, like, well, a really fickle, not all women, but there is a fickle mindset.
There's something else also, and that is, like, there was always this really kind of forced, pathetic attempt to, like, to make Hillary cool. You know, like, and even just like,
oh, like her trying to rap up like Jay-Z,
or like Pokemon Go to the polls and that stuff like that. It just was like, it was so forced, and people are just like, oh, you know, barf. Like, it's just this whole thing is like, kind of like you said, of trying to make Hillary into this this gifted politician, or like, I, you know, iconic fashion or something. But she wasn't any of those things. Like, she was super lame, and everybody knows it.
And here's the thing, I think part of the reason why they reacted that way is because if only subconsciously, they realized that, oh crap, we actually have to make people want to vote for Hillary. We can't just keep peddling this lesser evil nonsense year after year and make these boring appeals to good technocratic management. And ultimately, as a few socialists pointed out, the problem with Hillary is that she basically brought a wonkish knife to a populist gunfight.
And I think this has the potential of transforming both parties, in the sense that with the Democratic Party, it's sort of a repudiation against this like neoliberalism of Hillary Clinton. And I think that with the Democrats, I have no idea where the Democratic Party are go. They could very well. I think the future of the Democratic Party is more to being the party of sort of like ethnic identity and interest.
What about Tulsi Gabbard or Jim Webb? Like, there definitely is a way that the Democratic Party could react to Trump populism and just present a kind of a little more of a socialized nationalism.
I'm a big fan of Jim Webb, but he was totally marginalized by the Democratic Party.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if anything, he has more in common with like a Trump supporters. And Tulsi Gabbard, who's also independent-minded, I have a lot of respect for her, but I also think because she's very independent and she wasn't supportive of Hillary, like she may run for office and become like kind of like another like a Dennis Kucinich type candidate. So I think there is going to be, despite all those issues within the Democratic Party, there is definitely going to be sort of a backlash against that neoliberalism. But within the Democratic Party, obviously the key focus is going to be on that ethnic identity politics and like all the SJW stuff, but I could see a serious divide over economics.
Is indeed a divide, because I've seen mixed reactions, because as long-time readers of my blog know, I like to follow the left a lot and see what's going on over there. On the one hand, you have the socialist-leaning crowd that says, look, we can't just keep writing off working-class whites. We have to counter right-wing populism with left-wing economic populism. And then you have the Arthur Chu SJW crowd saying, no, screw these white racists. We just need to get more non-whites to turn out and vote.
Yeah, like,
so those are definitely like a battle for the soul of the Democrats.
Perfect example of like Hillary's famous comment where she said that ending like regulating Wall Street is not going to end like racism and misogyny.
No, she was like, it doesn't matter if we break up the big banks. It matters if we end racism and sexism. I think that was the quote. And I mean, it's odd because there is this weird population of like disenfranchised minorities. And like, you know, like where we're saying, well, why did Donald Trump get, you know, more of the black vote than Romney? Why did he get more Hispanics voting for him? I think part of this is because there's minorities reacting against minorities. I think there's a lot of black people who see Black Lives Matter and think, like, I don't want to be associated with that. Maybe it's not, you know, it's obvious, it's not a huge percentage, But there is, I mean, I did see this poll that said like 60% of black people disliked all lives, Black Lives Matter, would rather say All Lives Matter. So I do think there is this kind of like minority, reaction within minority populations where certain parts of the population want to distance themselves from other parts of the population.
Seeing this with women too. The majority of white women supported Trump, and significant numbers of women distanced themselves from the feminist label, even if they have some feminist views on things. Same kind of idea.
Sure, yeah.
Right. Also, in fact, I even saw some articles in liberal outlets saying that white women had betrayed the sisterhood in favor of race.
Yes.
Well, there's another thing too, and that is, a lot of these, we've talked about this before on the show, that a lot of this newer feminism and stuff is like, some of it is just so freaky, like no normal woman would want anything to do with it. Like, you know, Trigglypuff and all that stuff. Pansexual, like, you know, a trans black feminism. Like, it's just, some of it is just so freaky that, like, even if you're like, a lot of feminists that I know are just like, they just want like legal abortion. Like, they don't give a shit about any of this stuff.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's this whole idea, like, not to be so, I'm going to sound so crass in saying this, but like, it's almost like attractiveness versus unattractiveness. Because like, there is this, I remember seeing this image of this, trans man, this fat guy with tits, and he's balding and he's breastfeeding a baby. And people are like, this.
Have you seen that Family Guy where Peter Griffin is breastfeeding Stewie?
No. But I was looking on Facebook. This is like when this image came out. You know, this like fat guy breastfeeding this baby, and I was thinking that, you know, some of my like shitlord friends were posting it to like make fun of it or something. And then like I was like, holy shit, shitlords are posting this image, and then like just regular women are posting it, you know. And it's like half of them are posting it because it's like they think it's a joke, and then there's like these women who are just like, oh, this is so inspiring. And it's like there's this weird thing where it's like women want to make, or there's this segment of women that really want to make like unattractiveness attractive, like destroys standards of beauty, right. And like that's a thing,
and it's absolutely absurd, because just imagine if a man who was obese lived in his parents' basement and had horrible social skills shamed women for not finding him attractive. They'd call him a nice guy TM, but for some reason women expect to, well, not most women, certain women expect to be found attractive unconditionally.
Yeah, there is a...
Because beauty standards are manufactured by the patriarchy.
And I also see it kind of, like, within SJWs, I see, like, two different types. I see the ones, the people who are, in a sense, kind of, a lot of them are underemployed, and they feel a lack of purpose in their life, and they want to feel like they're part of something important. And then you have the people who are successful, and it's just like a form of like virtue signaling.
Yeah. But like a lot of
this there's a new social justice virtue signaling thing with the election to change your profile picture to just a black square. I've seen a lot of that, and it's like, it's almost like just seeing that you realize that these people haven't learned jack shit, you know?
Yeah. And that's to bring this back to the election again. Well, I think what's important to keep in mind is that despite all of their snark, despite all of their supposed epic takedowns, I mean, I lost count of how many times John Oliver supposedly destroyed Trump.
Right.
Despite all of their social justice snark, despite all of Tim Wise's tantrums, they lost. And so I think maybe we should stop overestimating the influence these people have.
Well, yeah, it's just that they have the megaphone. That's
for
it.
For like a long time. Like, it's always been, like, basically my entire life, every single president who's gotten elected has been, like, hand-picked by the establishment from, like, Bush Sr., Clinton, the other Bush, Obama, and this is, like, the first time in modern history that someone who was against the establishment got elected.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
we've nominated.
Well, I think, I mean, just move this back for one second, and we're talking about people like Tim Wise and all this. I think that the Tim Wise is like a mouthpiece of the establishment in a lot of ways. Like what Tim Wise says is what the establishment says. And I think that people, and that's why Tim Wise has the megaphone. That's why John Oliver has the megaphone. And even Bill Maher, you know, all these people who are supposedly the rebels.
I've noticed Bill Maher, he's usually active on Twitter. And he's been silent for the last... the election.
And so has Lena Dunham, too. So has Lena Dunham. Amazing.
Oh, Lena Dunham. Didn't she post that whole "We Want the Extinction of White Men" video?
Yeah, yeah. And it was with her dad. Her dad was the one speaking in it, too. So, I mean, but I do want to say that, you know, these guys are the establishment. So the thing is, it's like we think that they have all this influence because they have the megaphone. But honestly, I think over the last year that someone like Jared Taylor probably had way more influence than someone like Tim Wise. You know, like I think that someone like, you know, I think that these fringe people, I mean, Alex Jones, for instance, had way more influence than Paul Joseph Watson, you know, people that are on the so-called alt-light, like those types.
Sargon of the Cud. The last time I think something like this happened was Eastern Europe in the 1970s. Kind of the same thing. The political establishment on paper had all the power and all the cards. Hell, they had the resources of the totalitarian states at their disposal. But all the people were against them.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The underground media, Semizdat, they called it. That's what I named my blog and my YouTube channel after, and partly for that reason. The underground media that's really telling it like it is and conveying what the people know in their hearts to be true, in contrast to this hollow establishment that has only its own hold on power and positions of importance. And we're at that kind of place now.
That goes to the subject of the polls too, because the a lot of people, you know, due to the social hostility or some of the social price they'd have to pay, like didn't want to admit that they were for Trump. So a lot of these polls everything weren't necessarily factoring that in, do you want to, you know, do you want to vote for Hillary, or are you a racist, subhuman piece of shit? Like, what, you know, that's all the poll questions. I imagine them being worded, you know.
Hearing that whole thing about, like, the shy Trump supporters, like, I was very dismissive of that. Like, maybe they were, like, 1%. But that could very well be true, because you saw that in a lot of – I know, like, Wisconsin, like, I hear all these people saying, oh, calling Wisconsin, like, Wis Cuxon. But he won.
Hey. Yeah, I mean, the thing is,
yeah,
he didn't even
win it in the primaries. Ted Cruz won it by like a lot. So I didn't have much hope for Wisconsin. Also, because like I was born there, and I remember as a kid when, you know, Dukakis even won there. So I was like, yeah, dude, there's no way he's not going to win Wisconsin. You know, so that, I thought that was pretty amazing, incredible, actually.
The thing about, like, people in those upper Midwest states, like Wisconsin, that, like, have a lot of people of, like, German and Scandinavian descent, like, they're very big on being kind of, like, polite, and I think a lot of them are turned off by, like, Trump's kind of rude, obnoxious, like, persona. When it comes down to the actual policies, a lot of those people are just regular middle-class white people who support sensible policies.
Well, I mean,
What might have also had a lot to do with it was those the Milwaukee riots just a couple months ago. I can imagine that, you know, that was like a pretty big deal. And I bet you that the Black Lives Matter and everything, I bet that pushed a lot of people to support Trump because they were just so appalled.
Well, that's what I've said. There's been this you know, we've called it on the show the perfect storm, and that's, you know, the migrant crisis in Syria, that's the Black Lives Matter, you know, these sort of riots that have happened in Milwaukee and Baltimore, and also the transgender movement, you know, Caitlyn Jenner being named Woman of the Year across the board. And
but
I think,
one thing that's...
well, what I think happened is that a lot of normal white people saw that and thought like, wow, this country is turning into something that makes me feel really uncomfortable. And when I look at Europe, I see the same thing happening there too.
Right, and all of this is also compounded by the bad economy, because I think a lot of people subconsciously recognize that all this official propaganda about the economy recovering is nonsense, and that the majority of Americans still live paycheck to paycheck, can't afford a $500 emergency. And when they see these smug apparatchiks and pundits telling them that, oh, things are getting better, you know, be optimistic, I think that engenders resentment. And then when you top it off that they're being culturally disrespected by liberals as well, then liberals really have nothing to offer them. And yeah, this election showed that.
I mean, there's no media that, besides maybe something like South Park, that sort of takes the perspective that like a lower middle class white person might have. If you're a lower middle class white person and you just watch cable TV, most of the stuff kind of shits on you. And upper class white people, they don't really mind, you know, being made fun of because they have money, they have security. But lower class white people, you know, they don't have anything. They're living paycheck to paycheck. If they get involved in an accident, you know, they might just, you know, they're basically left to die. So they're being shit on all the time. And Donald Trump's the way they can say, fuck you to the establishment. That's what Michael Moore said. And I think he was right.
Yeah, that even that while I think the white working class and many regular white people have been screwed over economically by both parties over the years. But
yeah,
the difference is at least the right doesn't shit on them culturally as well.
Yes, and so yes.
Better might as well go for the person who at least doesn't insult you, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the Democratic Party is the platform is like they have supporters that are basically like, you know, we need to kill all white people and things like that. Like, if you're a white person, like, whose side are you going to take?
Yeah, I mean,
a huge demographic of people that like are openly hostile to you, hate you.
Yeah,
or you have this other group that it just kind of sells you out a little bit. And like, but you know, they don't think that you need to like check your privilege and like get, you know, go through some kind of weird
personality,
you know, re-education camp or something.
Go on.
I'd like to talk about the kind of direction of a Republican Party. So they had a massive victory, and Republicans took control of the House and the Senate. I don't think that's happened. They had the House in the Bush era, but they haven't had complete control like this since the 1920s. And that's sort of viewed as a referendum on in favor of Trump, and that does give Trump a degree of leverage. And also, the senators who were the most anti-Trump, Mark Kirk from Illinois and Kelly Iota from New Hampshire, and fairly they're both like blue states. New Hampshire leans not as much, sort of a swing state. They both lost. But at the same time, how much of an impact can Trump have if a lot of the Republican congressmen and senators are not going to be, a lot of them like support like free trade. You have people like John McCain. Can he successfully sort of reinvent the Republican Party?
Well, I think that the reinvention is going to come from the backlash. You know, when suddenly like all of these people are just called racist and everything, like they're going to end up gravitating toward that. It's going to be more of a response to that, not just like he's going to go in and attempt to implement all of this this policy or whatnot. Like really, like there's going to be a major freak out like when he tries to do anything, and that's going to, I think it's going to just draw battle lines at that point.
Well, and there's also one thing I'll say as a word of caution. Again, going back to Obama in 2008, everyone thought he would transform politics, but it turns out he actually ended up presiding over his own party's complete collapse and failure, and his signature so-called achievement, Obamacare, could very well be repealed. And keep in mind that when Obama won, the Republicans were in complete disarray. Yeah. And right now, Trump is entering a similar situation. So I think it's incumbent on Trump supporters, especially in the alt-right, to hold him accountable, to hold his feet to the fire and make sure that he performs well and not just deify him or become complacent just because they think one of their own is now in the White House.
Oh, wait, were these alt-right supporters thinking that they have one of their own guys in the White House?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, I remember, I think it was Anatoly Karelin said this, that, you know, all the, you have all these Russian nationalists, and they see Putin up there, and they just think, you know, when Putin does things that don't really fit into a Russian nationalist platform, they think that it's like a trick, you know? It's like, oh, he's just doing that to sort of show the establishment that he can play ball with them, but he doesn't really mean that. And Karelin said that the alt-right, like if Donald Trump does something that's, you know, perceived as globalist or whatever, that they'll say, oh, well, you know, Donald Trump, he doesn't really mean that. You know, he's just sort of tricking the globalists. He's tricking the Jews a little there, you know?
Well, and you saw the same thing with liberals.
Playing like 5D chess.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And you saw the same thing with liberals and Obama. Every time he sold out and every time he acted like the neoliberal technocrat that he is, they would simply apologize for him and say, oh, well, you know, he's just being held hostage by the Republicans.
Exactly.
He has to compromise.
Exactly. The Congress. Yeah. Like I was telling a friend, I was like, oh, well, Obama bombed so many countries. He bombed more countries than Bush. And she was like, no, but you don't know what goes on behind the scenes. You know, like when it's Donald Trump, it's like he wants to nuke the world. But when it's Obama destabilizing the Middle East, it's like it's not Barry's fault. He doesn't.
I totally agree with Barry, a guy that it's important to kind of have a strong degree of skepticism, not to sort of blindly support Trump the way that Obama supporters did. It is interesting if you sort of analyze the ideology. There's this sort of ideology of a conservative ink, which I think that that third party guy, McMullen, who was the Republicans who opposed Trump, like his ideology perfectly represents that. It's like low taxes, social conservatism, with being like pro-war and pro-open borders. I think the ideal direction of the Republican Party, because in the past, the big thing was that the Democrats were the party of like the working class and the unions, and the Republican Party is going to be was the party of the rich. You're going to have that strong corporate influence in both the Democratic and the Republican Party, but at the same time, there's also kind of the country. There's going to be kind of a divide if the Democrats are the party minority group identity, and the Republicans go in a more nationalist direction.
Ideally, so you're saying that Republicans would represent white people, and the Democrats would represent minorities.
That's a significant factor, but ideally, like to sort of go in the direction of what Ryan Englund was saying earlier about a lot of these parties in Europe. They're nationalist parties, but they're also adopting, in a sense, a kind of like a radical centrist platform of like some degree of like soft socialism and being socially moderate.
Kind of like us, basically. All left.
Yeah.
What's funny is the all left is like all over the place. You have like Rabbit supporting Trump. You have Jill Stein supporters. Robert Lindsay is supporting Hillary.
He supported Hillary.
And he actually said he's banning people who are openly pro-Trump in his blog.
That's probably most of his readership, I would imagine, are Trump people. I can't really imagine that many Clintons.
Because if you talk to him on the issues, like he agrees with us like 90% of the time.
But he calls Trump supporters on the alt-right class cucks.
He calls them or fascists.
Oh,
he
I thought
Trump supporters are fascists.
But class cuck is hilarious, though, because that's like that's a great like alt-left slur. You know, we can call
thing we should call the $30,000 a year guy that reads Ayn Rand. You know,
yes.
Like, that's a good name for somebody like that.
The class cuck, yeah, like you know, like the that's a good like Reason.com reader too.
Well,
class
cuck. Since you mentioned Ayn Rand,
the thing about like class cucks, it's sometimes like the working class in some cases who idealize the rich. Sometimes the people who are closer to the rich, like the upper middle class, actually resent them more because they're closer to them and more exposed to them.
Right. And speaking of Ayn Rand, I think that what's important is to, again, hold Trump's feet to the fire and make sure that he actually implements a populist agenda and doesn't allow Republicans to go back to the usual Paul Ryan, you know, free up the job creators, open borders, outsourcing, and all the other usual Conservatism Inc. platforms.
I think Conservatism Inc. is dead. I think it's dead.
Yeah, let's make sure Milton Friedman stays dead.
Yes. Couldn't have said it better myself.
It's also going to be interesting to see if he'll inspire new candidates to run in 2 years. I know there was that guy who challenged Paul Ryan, but he lost, and he was kind of – I describe him as being kind of like alt-light in a sense.
Oh, Paul Nealon.
Paul Nealon, yeah. Yeah, Robert, maybe you should run. Are you going to start? Are you going to –
Maybe we should – why don't all three of us run. Alex can run for like Congress in Jersey. Rabbit, you can run in Arizona.
Well, I was reading this book, and it was like this weird like V-Dare like thing about like how you would actually do secession in America, and it would be running for the state legislature and trying to secede county by county. But if you like look at a map of the United States, just county by county voting, it is so fucking red. It looks like it's coming from between Megyn Kelly's legs. I think that, you know, the blue states, it is so small. When you the blue, like the blue chunks, it's like part of California and like part of Nevada and then just like Vermont. So I'm like, that's hilarious. You could just make those into their own countries. And guess what? They'd both be ethno states. You would just have this white liberal ethno state in the Northeast. And then you would have Mexican states in the Southwest. And that's why it's so funny, though, because it's like all these white nationalists are right there, like, we want Trump, we want Trump. But it's like, if you look at the parts of the country that sort of look more like what a white nationalist state would be, they vote blue. I mean, I guess, you know, we all sort of know why they do, but, you know.
We have the same kind of thing up here in Canada. You get the hardcore conservative types that say they want the Western provinces to succeed, but it's the Western provinces that always elected the socialist NDP for provincial governments and a lot of MPs, too. So if these far-right types want the Western Canada concept to succeed, they're going to be taking the red hordes with them.
What's interesting is a lot of populist policies have actually came out of, like, red states. Like, North Dakota has a public bank, and Alaska has a basic income from their oil revenue.
Yeah.
Right, and that's why I've exhorted the alt-right to embrace more progressive economics, because turns out that this Randroid stuff doesn't fly in most white areas.
Yeah.
Bay Area guy, do you think you could start like an alt-left ethno-state within the Bay Area, or that's a pipe dream?
Well, given that I'm the only white alt-left person I can think of, well, I don't think I'd enjoy much success. The Bay Area, I think it's safe to say, will be a multicultural, although less neoliberal than it used to be. I do sort of sense some discontent among a lot of people due to housing prices and other forms of inequality.
That reminds me actually of when we talk about these local elections that David Duke didn't do very well at all. Like, he only got like 3%. I was expecting him to do a lot better because of all the publicity. And, you know, when he ran in like, what was it, like 1990 or 92 or whenever it was, like, he almost won the whole thing, the Senate race. Like,
he was in the House of Representatives, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the House of Representatives.
The State House, not the U.S. Congress.
Oh, okay.
Well, I guess you could say that Duke losing was yet, in some ways, yet another repudiation of the establishment. If you could. And Duke, in some ways, was an established old-school white nationalist, and he got swept aside just like every other old figure.
Yeah, I also think it's proof that that Donald Trump's victory wasn't totally due to this white nationalist thing. I mean, David Duke.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at is that, you know, Duke only won like 3% of the vote, but yet, you know, Trump won Louisiana like, you know, by like a landslide very easily.
Yeah, so yeah.
Clearly, everyone who was voting for him was not, you know, a white identitarian or something, or, you know.
Well, maybe they were white nationalists, but then they were just like, they didn't like David Duke. Yeah. Like, they were just like, they didn't go on David Duke, like, they were more like Radics kind of white nationalists, so they like Trump.
Right, they were part of, like, the other factions that, like, hate David Duke.
Yeah.
There's always been that infighting of those people.
Yeah, exactly.
Make fun of his plastic.
Like, Don Black and David Duke got into a fight, and then, like, they all were white nationalists, and they just, like, wanted Don Black.
By the way, you might find it interesting to know that Washington Post actually ran an article about how Don Black's son renounced his father's ideology and is now a borderline SJW.
Yeah, Don Black's son, like, wears a cowboy hat and has like a ponytail and he's like super anti-racist. But I mean, I don't know. That's a weird one.
I mean, that's to be expected because, you know, he's like any other kid. And if you're basically indoctrinated by your parents into anything, you're going to rebel.
Yeah, exactly. At some point, that's like know? With Trump and like, millennials, you know, like a lot of people my age have like these, super libtardy parents, and they've like grown up with libertardation their entire life, and then they're like, "Fuck you, mom and dad!"
Family ties in the 80s.
Oh yeah, you
know? Yeah, yeah.
What is interesting is I think it's like young people naturally want to rebel, and a lot of millennials are economically disenfranchised. But you see both the Bernie Sanders movement and the alt-right; they're both like youth movements.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, and I think at a fundamental level, a lot of young people, especially young white people, recognize that things just aren't working out for them, and that society is not really theirs anymore.
And I
whether on a cultural or economic level.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think everyone knows that they're making less money than their parents were when they were the same age. Or a lot of young white people know that. And I think there is this idea that young white people kind of grew up with multiculturalism and maybe they had it in a small amount where they were growing and they, you know, it was fine. It wasn't a big deal. Like, you know, the idea of like not wanting other people to be there was like something they would never think of. But I think once they realized that they weren't in the same economic situation their parents were in and that the landscape around them was changing and they sort of just felt alien in their own towns even and felt like strangers in strange lands and were unsafe and uncomfortable and didn't see a future. I think that's where something like the alt-right just sort of comes in like a bulldozer and sweeps up all these kids who really think like, fuck, where else am I going to go? I need to think in a new way.
And this kind of goes back to that comment Barry guy told me about that Dota said, that basically the end result of globalism is everyone is just one like a global sweatshop.
Yep.
And what's happened?
That's exactly right.
You see the role of economics and like how it ties in with race. White people from like the 50s to the 80s and even the 90s were very prosperous and on a much higher economic level than non-whites. And I think there was either there was a level of white guilt about that, or they felt that they wanted, because they were economically in a higher level, they felt like they had to sort of compensate by proving that they're not racist. But like these globalism is pushing former middle class whites down to the same level as other groups. And then once that happens, all those sort of political correctness goes out the window and you just have people like fighting for scraps.
Yeah.
And that's why I've said time and time again, this very bizarre and unique combination of multiculturalism and cutthroat neoliberal economics is not sustainable. And we've all been proven correct on that front.
Yeah, I mean, political correctness is a language that is meant to just keep everybody in order. You know, let the majority population just be self-intolerant and try to deny themselves, and that's how we'll keep them all in order. And I think once people, once they start to feel uncomfortable, like you said, the political correctness goes out the order, and the whole system, the whole house of cards that they built, it just comes tumbling down. And it's hilarious that Donald Trump. Yeah. It's hilarious, though, that, like, Donald Trump is the person that has done it. It's like, you know, the entertainment, the thing that was just meant to keep us all entertained, like, it just fucking rebelled against itself. The managerial class folded
give
in.
Give the show The Simpsons credit. They predicted a Trump presidency back in the year 2000.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was the rage against the machine.
If you watch that
Well,
that
but he was running for president back then, yeah. Speculating with running for president. So they did predict it, but they sort of had some, like, clues about it.
What were you saying, Rabbit?
Oh, I was going to say, if you just go and watch that video of Trump, like body slamming Vince McMahon and shaking his head, and just think, like, that's our president now.
Yeah.
That's just incredible. I'm like,
yeah, that's what
that wrestling...
That's what my mom said to me. Like my mother was like, I was on the phone with my mom the other day, and she's like, Alex, like, just think about what happened. Donald Trump is president. That's proof that you can do anything.
It's kind of like white people now feel the way like black people did when Obama got elected.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so funny.
Although, unlike black people, like I said before, white people should be a little more cautious and a little more critical.
Oh, yeah.
And actually demand that Trump does something for them.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's the weird thing. It's just like this whole idea of the symbolic victory. Like, yeah, symbols matter, and I think they matter a lot. But, like, you know, there's a Death in June album where that's like, what happens when the symbols shatter? You know, like, we need a real reality.
I think, like, the perfect example of symbolism is like Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, his big accomplishments were like amnesty and tax cuts for the ultra rich, well, but he's like the symbol of American patriotism and like the white middle class.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a time in the early 80s, I think, where people were really comfortable financially, though. I mean,
yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, the ill effects of Reaganomics took place later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was at the expense of the future, you know. Yeah. So initially, like, all of this trade and stuff with Japan was like, you know, was really like prosperous for the U.S. But it was like all the road that Reagan took us down, like, is what we're paying for now.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, I think Trump ties into that because Trump was an icon of that era, and Reagan was not. I mean, I'm no fan of Reagan, but I think that kind of Reagan nostalgia has more to do with the nostalgia for that era, because the 80s was the last era where we had like a strong, prosperous white middle class.
Well, that existed in the 90s as well. You know, you had the whole like soccer mom phenomena. I think a lot of young white people sort of...
Well, I think the difference with the 90s, though, is that there was a lot more cultural alienation. I mean, just consider Rampage killings as depicted by Mark Ames. They exploded during the 90s. And you also have to remember that the prosperity of the 90s was very short-lived, and it was inflated by this stock bubble that conveniently collapsed once Clinton was lucky enough to leave office before it did collapse.
Ryan, you want to add one last thing about the election victory or the election results before I wrap up the show?
Yeah, boy, sure didn't see it coming, eh?
You didn't at all?
You know, towards the end, in the last couple of weeks, I thought, you know, this is sort of what it looked like going into Brexit, too. Like, something is changing. We are seeing a global realignment of political conflict. The old idea of liberal versus conservative, it's going to be different now.
nationalists versus globalists.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
That's the 21st century.
And the nationalist is going to be a bit more aligned with the working class, and the globalist is going to be aligned with the upper class. Yep. That's the way it seems to be going.
Fuck the class cucks.
No. At the end of the show, I'd like to thank you guys for being on.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for having us.